Live show, it's that time again, the
Blog
8 o'clock
Talk Radio.
Wednesday evening. You know, every time I do that, I always think that the Blog Talk Radio and the lady saying that blocks out my voice, but I realized listening one day that you can hear me in the background even though she's saying Blog Talk Radio. So, even if you didn't hear it because she was talking, this is the K Thompson Live Show. I am the co-host, one of the co-hosts, Eric Payne, also known as the son. You are?
K Thompson, I'm your mother. And we're ready to roll just about, and we're going to be talking to Wayne Gilman in a minute, and he's going to be calling in. And, you know, I want to talk about, you know, the debates for a little while before we get into, you know, a whole lot of other stuff that I know you have in mind. Is that all right?
Yeah, good. If you can get a little closer, lady, a little closer.
Okay, there we are.
Trying to help her out, everybody, but every time I say get closer, you know, sometimes people want to do the opposite of what you say sometimes. Anyway, also, in this show, a special interview with a special guest, my mom. I'm interviewing her about her life and stuff. So, and the stuff. But you wanted to talk about, as we're waiting for, as you know, Wayne's probably gone, of course, our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman that you met at WLIB Radio and BLS. Yeah. And we'll be talking with him about the debate, too. He'll want to get in on that, I'm sure. But what are your thoughts?
When you refer to WLIB, you're supposed to say WLIB-BLS or WLIB-WBLS, whatever. You know, but, you know, that's where we who have been on the air over in New York City at the most, the best station, you know, I thought at that particular time when I was working over there. I think I don't even remember the amount of years I was over there. But it was big fun. As a matter of fact, the powers that be let me get away with a whole lot of things. You know, I was being very creative on the air. I was thinking of all sorts of things that I thought would be of interest to people listening to my voice. And lo and behold, the sun put me through just about anything that I wanted. So it was very creative, and I learned a lot. And it was great talk radio, and loved it. So now we are continuing with the point of, you know, talk radio here on the Internet. As a matter of fact, Eric, I didn't even know what the Internet meant until, you know, I interviewed Donald, Uncle Donald, Congressman Donald, who passed away not too long ago. And I remember one day I was he was scheduled to be interviewed, and I called him to be ready, and he said, well, you know, let me see, I'm going to be in Johannesburg, and then I'm going to Somalia, and then I'm going to Ethiopia. And I said, oh, my God. I said, no, what are you talking about? You know, you're on. You know, it's almost 8 o'clock. And he said, Kay, we're on the Internet. I said, yeah, and I didn't know what the Internet meant at that time. So, you know, he said, you're heard all over the world, and I can be anywhere calling in. So that was probably my understanding of the Internet. So it doesn't go back that far, but I do know, yes, we are heard all over the world, and it's absolutely fantastic because, as you know, I've interviewed some major people from a lot of different countries, and it's really very interesting.
Yeah, because the Internet is global, and it's all over the world, so it's kind of what I keep telling you, redundant to say, we're on the Internet, heard all over the world, because nowadays it's really interesting, you know, and I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek, but I'm really being serious because nowadays, from the time when radio was originally started, and during the days that you were doing radio and things like that, there was not that computer connection. The world was not connected via computer and via the Internet. The Internet hadn't been created as of yet. And just to say you're on the Internet now, it's almost nowadays people know that when they say something is on the Internet, it is something that is global, and it is something that people can access from anywhere in the world. And it's just interesting that that is part of just the assumed given when someone talks about the Internet. And that just gives you an example of how far technology has come, you know, because somebody says now something's on the Internet. There's no, you don't have to say, oh, well, we can be holding all over the world, because the given and the assumption is, and the automatic is, that it is holding all over the world. So that's a really one of the remarkable things about technology, particularly as it pertains to media, radio, audio, video, and, of course, the written word. being accessible to every place. So you wanted to talk a little bit about the debate. What did you think about the debate yesterday?
Yeah, well, today, you know, it's actually, it was extremely interesting, and I also thought it was a little bit stupid as usual. You know, Donald Trump. Every time I think of you know, Donald Trump, they're speaking, you know, with the faces that he makes, I cannot imagine. I can not imagine him being the president of the United States. I can't really imagine him being the president. Well, his own company, he's very wealthy, but I'm quite sure that, yes, he probably does the same thing. But anyway, of somebody making the facial expressions that he makes, just in other words, he is not a politician. I can't imagine him being president of the of a country, any country, as a matter of fact. I do think that he is an entertainer, and I think he's amusing because I laugh all the time when I see him making these strange faces to, you know, people who are, you know, there to run the world, really. I mean, they are key people in the whole political setup of, you know, dealing with different countries and dealing with the different issues and the different problems that we have all over the world. So I don't consider this anything light to make the faces and the nonsense that this man does. But anyway, I watched it earlier, the debates, and wow. What do you think of the debates?
I think, yeah, I think it's really juvenile for someone to make the type of, to constantly, you know, when other people talk and make faces and talk trash and try to loud talk him and all that and just really just be a jerk, and he pretty much is a jerk. And just because you're saying some things that some people touch upon or wholeheartedly agree with, and usually the most vocal people are the ones that are usually the most extreme, and you touch a nerve or you say something that a lot of these kind of wackos that show up to, that his type of rhetoric appeals to and attracts, you know, and thinks that that's kind of a mandate of people. I think it's just because he's getting the most attention. And, you know, it is also something interesting to consider that so many of these people are so disgruntled to such an extreme point. And it also, you really wonder, do we people live in the same world? I mean, you know, a lot of these people have been really, really upset since Obama's been elected president, and they, and it kind of manifests itself in some very bizarre ways where you have to question what is the real issue with this president being elected. And then every time Donald Trump whips up a crowd and says so-and-so is weak and the president this and that person is weak and I'll tell them what to do, it just kind of, it's interesting to see some of these people really kind of let their true emotions and true raw feelings be shown about how much they really, really kind of despise the president and also the Democratic portion of the electorate. And it's not as if Barack Obama, people can say what they want, they have a longer history with Hillary Clinton, but it's not as if you can ever say that Barack Obama was kind of a nasty or rude politician where people, you know, sometimes people have a problem with people's personality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's never been anything but respectful to people.
Yeah, sure.
So it's kind of hard to be so vehemently anti him. I mean, what is his very personality? One of the elected officials, and I can't even stand to look at you. Really? Why?
Why?
Well, I mean, it's just remarkable how hateful some of these people are. We got also our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman, here kicking in on this conversation. If I get your mic on, Wayne, let me see.
You know,
go ahead, Mom.
Yeah, I know. You know, what I know to be is that people don't like President Obama, number one.
There you go, Wayne.
Hi, Wayne.
Okay. Hi, good evening. How you doing?
Fine. We're involved in a conversation about, you know, the nastiness of some people. That President Obama, I'm maintaining right now that the reason why, let's face it, that a lot of people, you know, in this country do not like President Obama is because he is a black man, period, in, out, okay? A lot of the people that still have leanings toward racism, you know, just can't get that out of their system. It's amazing, you know, and it's a shame because the fact that, you know, Black people aren't going to go anywhere. Brown people aren't going to go anywhere. White people aren't going to go anywhere. And they perpetuate this, and therefore they use that as a basis for somebody being president, like he's not adequate enough. Don't they realize the man and his wife are attorneys? Don't they realize that they have more educational information and degrees than they have in some of their little fingers? So, you know, then some people just don't like to associate with black people. Who cares?
You know, I agree with you, Kay. I think that's the elephant in the room. I mean, I have seen such despicable behavior in the Republican Party, and, you know, the grandstanding, the level of insults, the racial profiling to a certain extent in terms of what Donald Trump has said about different ethnic groups and nationalities and how he would wipe off, you know, some whole families. And then talk about, you know, bringing the country back. A lot of it is typical of what Adolf Hitler said back in the day when he was trying to rebuild Germany, you know, and after the First World War. And, you know, I think the thing that's going to bother me the most when Barack Obama goes is the level of calmness and sanity that has been in the White House the last 8 years, you know, at the end of his administration. You know, they went through Barack Obama with a fine-tooth comb, and it seems like no sooner did he get the election and everybody was congratulatory of the historic moment that finally a person of color has gotten in there, then all of a sudden, it was like open season by the Republicans to get after Obama and the conservative element. You heard about this birther movement that a lot of conservative, primarily white talk show hosts in this country started, and Donald Trump was behind, you know, getting the accuracy of where Barack Obama lived, if he was born in Kenya or Hawaii, and he stayed on a campaign steadily beating the drum about Barack Obama's birthplace, and I never hear one peep out of Donald Trump about Senator Ted Cruz being born in Alberta, Canada. No one talks about Cruz being questioning his credentials, you know, and it's the same dynamic. Barack Obama's mother was a natural-born American citizen, and she gave birth to this child who was fathered by an African, and all of a sudden it's thrown into question about how he's not legitimately the president because he's got Kenyan roots, or if there was a perception that he was born in Africa. And Donald Trump was, I wouldn't be surprised in the least bit if he was financing a campaign behind that, the way he would talk about it. And this man last night stood up next to Ted Cruz and didn't say jack expletive expletive about this man's birthplace. And I'm not saying that there's anything illegal about what Senator Cruz is doing, because for the last two centuries, if your mama or your daddy was born in the United States and you're conceived outside the continental of the United States, you're still an American citizen. But the deal is, they make such a stink about Barack Obama, it just bothers me to no end. To me, there's not enough being said about that stuff, and they need to stir the pot by talking about that more so. The other thing is that you got Christie on the end, and all of a sudden now, because he was able to be on the final cut in terms of the debate last night, you see a lot of rhetoric and vitriol coming out of him, and I really don't think the country has really examined what he said, what he's done in the state of New Jersey. And, you know, he badmouths the Clintons, and, of course, it's politically expedient to do that, because anything that Hillary's done during the Obama years, you know, she's going to be criticized whether it was right or wrong. But, you know, some of the arguments seem to hold, you know, no water, and I'm just waiting to see what happens after this, but I'm just mystified that Donald Trump has managed to maintain this lead for so long, and it just shows the level of ignorance on the average American who would support that campaign.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's always, can you hear us okay, Wayne?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you heard me.
Okay. So, to me, it's just bizarre. It is surprising and bizarre to me. It's not so much surprising, but it's just kind of bizarre how people could just stand there and continually listen to this guy. I mean, like I said before, I can't stand to listen to somebody who's just bragging about themselves and basically a blowhard. I mean, he does his little stand-up bit. He talks about things that's on everybody's mind, right? Then he'll do his little stand-up thing and give his little shtick about, I know because I'm the best and because they're my friend. And he'll weave in his little celebrity status, you know, when he talks about people and he's been places and he's done that. And I know because I'm ahead and because they keep calling me in the news. And then he'll insult people. And so it's a real kind of a whole little show that this guy continues to do, and just to see all these people buying into it. This guy was on TV. He's a reality show phenomena, and it's also, like I said before, it's the level of to which we worship the wealthy people in the United States. So it's wealthy, mm-hmm. People are worshiping his celebrity and his wealth, thinking that somehow that's going to rub off on them. And because he's a big, rich white dude talking a lot of trash and what he's going to do. And so that's why Ted Cruz appeals. You know, he would carpet bomb everybody. And that's kind of the mentality of just go out and wipe everybody out. It doesn't look like you and it's not in your, you know, it's a John Wayne idiotic mentality. And when you're trying to fight this war against ideology, where there's really no way to clearly see the enemy, although you think you see the enemy, then clearly it behooves you to get everybody enlisted that believes like you do that, you know, what that ideology is professing and the whole terrorism aspect of it is wrong, you know. And so just to see these people continue, and, you know, when they had footage of a protester being thrown out of one of his events the other day, you could hear somebody say, light him on fire and sing hell. And this is just a lot of the crazy stuff that you're going to find in a big, huge crowd of people. I mean, these are the type of people that are coming out, and these are the type of people that he doesn't mind appealing to, and that's fine. But a leader also tries to educate people and to try to mold them and bring them around to and expose them to a certain way of thinking and try to educate, you know, and enlighten them. And he doesn't do that. He just straight appeals to the worst aspects of people. So, you know, and nobody else is willing to challenge him pretty much except for Jeb Bush, who needs to. And it's just really kind of interesting to see where all of these Republicans stand. Molly, you wanted to say?
Yeah. I don't know what to say about it. You know, I think we've said enough about it, really, because it's going to go on and on and on. And it all depends on who has the most money at this particular point in time. This man is a very wealthy man. He's been on television. He did have a show called The Apprentice, and it was very amusing and so forth. And he's an entertainer. You know, he says some of the things that he says and the faces that he makes, you know, he is entertaining people. I don't even know if he's serious about the presidency. He says he is. But this is quite a job, and people have to realize that, you know, we are on the brink of being destroyed, you know, by ISIS and, you know, other organizations, and we're hearing people, you know, having these little petty arguments, and it's boring, you know. So I know there are people paid to, you know, pay attention to this, like our politicians. They are being paid to make sure that they keep the United States of America safe, safe from harm, safe from all kinds of anything that anyone wants to come in and, you know, do us damage or wants to bring in some kind of ideology that we haven't been accounted, that we don't believe in, rather. We believe in a democracy, and we should always believe in that. People who are bent on destroying other people because of the color of their skin, that thing is so old, and you know that the people who are of different colors, different races, or different nationalities, or gender different, you know, we're not going to, we, everybody, being an African-American woman, We're not going to be tolerating that. Are we going to speak against it? Yes, we are, over and over and over again. But sometimes it gets boring speaking against the same things that people should know, that you need people to exist. I mean, this is so stupid. It gets to be really annoying at a time. I'd much rather watch somebody and listen to people who make me laugh the majority of the time. And the reason why I'm laughing here is because, you know, we went to see, and Wayne went to see Wendy Williams. Do you know Wendy?
Oh, of course. Where was Wendy? Oh, her appearance in on a comedy circuit or something like that?
Yeah. Went to see her this weekend down at the State Theater, and I couldn't stop laughing. So
no kidding.
Really funny. A little more, off color than she is on television, than she was on television, but it's real amusing still. And the people who came out to see her enjoyed it. Those people who didn't, that's their tough luck. But anyway, it was absolutely packed, absolutely packed. I wanted to see it for myself. So, and I give her credit,
wow.
You know. Her family is, they're good friends, so she is amusing, and I think she should keep on keeping on exactly what she's doing. She makes me laugh, and that's good. But anyway, let's get back to any kind of... Go ahead, Wayne.
No, I was just going to ask how long is the show?
Say it again?
How long is her show?
Oh, her show is an hour or two. I think it was about 2 hours. It could have been even close to 3 hours. You know, I didn't even realize how much, time it was. Really, it was it went on and on and on and on, and she can really, for her to stand there on the stage, well, this time she was sitting, which I thought was, very interesting, and just talking. She does what Wendy does best, talk. And to be able to do that, is a talent in itself, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And to make you interested enough in you staying there to listen to it, listen. Now, where did she get the numbers that she got? She deserves all that.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I would like to see that myself.
Yeah, Wendy, this show was good. You say that she's going on tour, Mom. She currently has a tour going.
I think that is it, that she is going to be around a different states. I don't have the schedule or anything. But anyway, that's what I understand it to be.
Yeah, so that was Wendy Williams' tour, and that was a good show. And she even gave you a little shout-out there because her parents told her about you. And that brings me to the next phase, I wanted to interview my mom because on top of being my mother, she's got a pretty interesting story in terms of women in media and some of the things that she's achieved over the years. And you mentioned that you know Wendy Williams' mother, Mrs. Williams, Shirley Williams, Shirley Skinner. And just tell us where you guys are from and a little bit about that. So you were born in where?
I'm not going to be talking for Wendy or for Shirley, but born in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And I'll tell you what was happening in Elizabeth. That was during a time... and not too long ago, we're still racism going on. I remember when I was in the kindergarten and, the teacher, what did she do?
So you're from Elizabeth,
yeah.
New Jersey, born several years ago, that you might not want to say.
Mother used me to integrate the different schools that
right,
I went to.
Right.
And my brother also, my sister also.
So let's put it in the historical context. During the course of this time in American history, in America, there was we're going through the 30s and 40s and 50s, right?
Yeah.
And so this was a time, obviously, we know of, as we reflect it or hold it up, opposite and parallel to America. African Americans, as we all know, were treated pretty much like second-class citizens. But where they could, black people went to work, had whole communities of well-to-do people, or certainly people with a certain like-mindedness, and you grew up in one of those communities in the pioneer homes in Elizabeth.
Yes, that's where the firearm doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really very, I found it to be a wonderful place at that particular time. Mother was teaching nursery school, and Daddy was working as a supervisor for parks and recreation, and also he, you know, was a welder, and they graduated from the South at Southern School. By the way, the Thompsons are going to be having a family reunion, and I know it's several people are listening to me, so I'm not going to be telling too much about what's going on, but we're going to be having a big family reunion in, I think we're going to be in Washington or Arlington, you know, right out of Washington, you know, next year. So that's in the planning stages. And we are all over the place, I'm telling you, because there's so many relatives.
Okay, so the port, the area of Elizabeth, New Jersey, was also called the port, and that was because it was down near the docks. And one thing I noticed in us driving around there, driving you and Uncle Buddy around there, was the big, huge Singer building. And that was a big, huge, one of those big old-time World War II-type factories that you see in newsreels and TV shows where people worked, and it was a time where you could come and have a job for a number of years there, right? And be a lot of people worked there, right?
I don't know. I don't know about that time. You know,
well, the Singer building. So you know about the Singer building, right?
Yeah,
so
that old building is still there. It was old then.
Right.
So, you know,
yeah.
But that was on the waterfront down there.
Mm-hmm.
So that made it interesting. And, you know, we couldn't go to the local pools because there was segregation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but that soon ended. And, you know, stuff happens. We want to say SHIT happens, and stuff happens. So,
right, so
we moved in to a different part of Mystic later, because Daddy was not only a supervisor of the playground and the gymnasium there, and Carver Center. A lot of good things though happened there, and I still talk to people who were there. By the way, that doesn't even exist anymore.
Right.
Elizabeth is one of the oldest cities, you know, the state of New Jersey, and it has quite a history, too. So, so many things. Elizabeth is a place where there were two planes that crashed in Elizabeth, okay? And there was there's an author, and I think her name is Jules someone. She was on the air not too long ago. She wrote a story about Elizabeth and about these planes crashing, you know, in Elizabeth, around the area of, going into Freeling Heights and Avenue in Elizabeth. I remember that distinctly because we drove to see it. And cousins of mine, you know, they know more about it than I know because I was younger than so many things happening.
Mm-hmm. And so let's bring it now. Now you move to Elizabeth, right? You're growing up and then you become interested in dance, and that would be something that kind of affects the rest of your life, correct? Because it's a performance and things like that. Talk about your interest in dance and how that led to other things.
You should know because you did some of the plays that
Let's talk about it in the beginning. Let's talk about it in the beginning.
Wayne, are you there? Wayne?
I'm still here. This is very interesting because I'm getting to know a little bit about Elizabeth that I didn't know before. I'm still trying to figure out where the port area is, but I don't want to interrupt. I mean, continue with your story.
I'm trying to get her to bring it up to where you guys met, Wayne, and that's why I'm trying to move her along in talking about that. So if you could talk about your dance days and how that affected your life and when you became interested in dance and things.
Let me see. When I first became interested, all right. Mother was a nursery school teacher, and she wanted me to have dance lessons at the place where the nursery school was. And after I got out of nursery school, let me see. She had me taking dance lessons. And the dance lessons, of course, I was the only black child in the thing and in the class at that time. And I remember them doing what you call a recital, and it was about Hawaii. And the mothers would get together and, you know, do different things about costuming and scenery. And they would make these big Hawaiian leis. If you don't know what a lei is a group of flowers, you know, that if you've ever been to Hawaii, you would find that you would have a lei put around your neck, you know, when you entered into Hawaii and then Honolulu or whatever part of Hawaii. But anyway, so I played Queen Liliuokalani you know, when we did this concert, of course, I was very young then. I don't know, maybe 5, 6, 7, something like that. But anyway, and the parents had to, you know, make these flowers that were fluorescent, and you had to put it around the ankles and the wrists and whatnot around the necks, and, you know, and then we danced to Queen Liliuokalani. And when the pictures came out, I couldn't be seen. My flowers could be because they had been sprayed by fluorescent paint. And here their flowers are dancing in the darkness stage. So, and no people couldn't see me. Mother used me to integrate. I remember the Girl Scouts that I belonged to. And Mother was one of the scout leaders, and she had formed the first all-black females, the Girl Scouts. And so my mother was, again, using me to integrate when we went away to a camp and, you know, so forth and so on.
So that's one of the things about dance that got you in. But also, as you're hearing, Wayne, you know, it's interesting to me as I hear the history of talking to people, my mother, people of her age, even people younger, that kind of every aspect of American life, if you are a person of color, you are constantly reminded that you are a person of color in American life. Even something as simple as the development of the film that they used back in those days, when people of color would go back and look at these films, and this idea was to put fluorescent as a part of the costume. Of course, some of the white kids would be seen, and the black kids wouldn't. And you also talked about the Girl Scouts and things like that. You also spoke about a story of the class that you would dance. The class you would do it kind of ballroom dancing and stuff like that. When you had to dance with the broom, because there's you and a Portuguese kid of color or ethnic kid, and when they were there, when one of you was absent, the other one could not dance with a white partner, so you just had to.
That was when I was in kindergarten.
Yeah, but talk about that.
Yeah, so, Wayne, want to hear this? Yeah, when
yes,
I was in kindergarten.
I'm interested. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I challenge people to remember when they felt a little bit different. If you could go back in your childhood, especially African Americans, especially Latinos, maybe some Indians, but anyway, there's a time when you feel different. And I was in the kindergarten at the time, and this kindergarten school apparently didn't have any other black kids. I didn't even know it at the time. And in the kindergarten, the teacher would have the little kids us do, you know, they, we would pick a partner, or they would give us a partner, and we would dance to music. Of course, you know, your little kid is just fooling around and so forth. And I remember that my partner one day was absent, and I had to dance with the broom. When I was absent,
my God.
He would have to dance with the broom, being that I think he was either Italian or Portuguese at that time. So I remember that distinctly. And, you know, that kind of stuff makes an indelible print on you. And you know that something is a little different. So that was one of the things that I had experienced.
Right. So at each point, it's just really interesting to hear, Wayne, you know, as you talk to someone and hear their history, that each experience and juncture in the course of America, that people of color have these stories like that. And
I think it's shameful that sort of thing would occur. And again, it just shows a lot what this country's founded on. But continue.
Right. I mean, it's really remarkable. Now, Ma, you talk about that sparked your interest in dance. And obviously, that's something that's pivotal in your life, because dance is what you chose to do, chose to be your form of expression, and also try to make it follow it from a profession standpoint to a certain degree. And where did it lead you then? What did you decide to do with it?
Listen, let me just go back to a minute. I remember, you know, having at the center, Carver Center, I played the role of Betsy Ross. You know who Betsy Ross was? She flew the American flag.
Flag, yeah.
We did scenes, and whoever was a narrator, you know, was narrating, you know, I think George Washington or something like that. I forget that. But I do remember sitting on this scene trying to make believe that I was sewing this flag, the American flag. Well, I grew up to know that the American flag was not necessarily the fairest thing for African Americans. So,
okay.
You know, you have a lot of lessons during that time. And then it came to be that, you know, naturally, I always had an interest in dance. So my sister and I started a dance studio. And this was after we had started teaching school. You know, boy, this is the history of my life, I'm telling you. But anyway, the Thompson Dance Studio. We started that in Elizabeth, in Newark, in the South Ward of Newark, and we had hundreds of students and many who are, you know, waiting for me to give them when we're going to be having a reunion, and we're going to be having a reunion very soon. Mm-hmm. However, we had the studio for ever since I think it was the 1970s that we started that studio. I don't remember the exact date, but I have a program from the 13th Annual Dance Concert.
It's really, okay, let's put a pause right here. But I just want to try to give you guys, my mom's kind of watching over the historical. I want to give you guys some markers. First off, so you go and you become interested in dance and you go to school. You decide you want to study dance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you started going to New York and mm-hmm. things like that. And you and Aunt Pat decided to form the Thompson Dance mm-hmm. Studio, which at that time in Newark, as you said, it was in the early 70s. And as my mother referred to, we have a program here which was from the latter part of that, of the existence of Thompson Dance Studio. And what happened was that was a time during the, I would suppose, the early 60s, that this studio was there to help the kids be exposed to culture, to be exposed to dance, to be exposed to the arts. And you guys really were very serious about that. When I look at some of the old literature, even inside of this program here, you guys were very serious about giving young black women at the time, who were mostly the students that you appealed to, even in the nursery school, as you said, that my grandmother, your mother, would always teach black history and always impart into the students that they were part of the lineage of history of people that were proud and had accomplished things. And that's something that you guys also did with Thompson Dance Studio, giving a lot of these young people that were coming in the inner city urban area, Newark, New Jersey, a city like many other black cities across the country that was trying to find an identity for black people. And so through the dance school, you guys were giving them, exposing them to culture.
As a matter of fact, we are the only black dance studio in the state of New Jersey. They didn't have any black sand dance studios. In Newark, New Jersey, there was a dance studio downtown Newark, and I'll never forget it, because it was a ballet. They were teaching me a ballet. I wouldn't say the name of the studio, but I don't want to embarrass them. I still feel angry about the fact that they had this dance studio downtown Newark, and they would not accept any black students until later on. And one of the kids who graduated from that school, meaning who studied at that school, went on to have her own studio in another city not too far from here. However, the dance studio, you know, when we had our concerts, we played to standing room only audiences at Symphony Hall in New Jersey. We also had gotten to the point where during the summer we would close for a while during the summer months, and maybe for about a month or so, I think, because we stayed open, you know, for those kids who, in fact, Mother had a nursing school there at the Thompson Dance Studio. And there are pictures that we're going to be putting up about the nursery school and some of the kids who were in the nursery school. For instance, people like Bernadette and Bridget, you know, who were in the studio, and Pat, Kim Joyner. Anyway, so many different names. And Kendra Pugh and, Gail Walker, instead of, I could mention so many different names. And my sister and I were going into New York. We were considered gypsies then. We would go into New York to study at the new dance group studios, the 97th Street Y, and different places with Pepsi Bethel, with Donnie McHale, Ned Alvinelli, didn't know him well. And, you know, we would just go from class to class because you wanted to get to be perfect in so many different techniques. Fred Benjamin, I remember taking classes with him. I remember Alvin studying under Donna McHale. I remember Shaniqua Baker Scott, good friend of mine, and so many other people. Janet Hicks going and doing that in modern dance in Maplewood, New Jersey, good buddy of mine. And so anyway.
So at this point, you have the dance school. You guys have this dance school, and you have it's really a cultural landmark in the city of Newark as it comes out of the period of the riots that happened in 1968, and then continues on as a city that tries to rebuild after this devastating effect, as happened with many cities across the country. So much so that this was a beacon that you had. Popular family names and people that would later go on to be celebrities who would bring their children to Thompson Dance Studio, Whitney Houston being one of them who used to come to Thompson Dance Studio. Sarah Vaughan, one of her daughters, used to bring one of her daughters. And really, if anybody, I just mentioned Whitney Houston, yes, anybody who's seen Whitney Houston's video, The Greatest Love of All, the motif of the video of little girls preparing for a performance, that was, I think, probably inspired by a memory that Whitney Houston had when she used to perform with Thompson Dance Studio, because it was the exact same scenario. So this was a place that was a beacon, for a cultural beacon in the community of Newark during those years. And so you were someone who was also interested in performing and things like that. And during the tenure of Thompson Dance Studio, you and Aunt Pat parted ways. She wanted to continue having a dance studio, and you got interested in TV and broadcast, correct?
With Whitney, I don't remember her staying long enough in the studio to really participate in any dance concert. I'm just not sure of that.
Okay.
But I do know Sarah Vaughan's daughter came, and a couple of other people came with, you know, who were famous in Newark for whatever they did. Let me see. Yeah, all right, let's fast forward. Fast forward into teaching and education, and it was teaching and... And he wrote a couple. Will you be quiet for a minute? Sorry about that. But anyway, there it was, me and Rush. Yeah, went into radio and television. How did I go into radio? Let me see. Oh, I remember when. Yeah, with Bill Franklin over there at WNJR, we started that, and then went from there to Well, let me jump to WLIV. Anyway, somebody offered me something over at WLIV. I don't remember who hired me. But anyway, I was hired, and I'll tell you who was that. Wayne, and you'll remember her, Judy Simmons. Judy Simmons was host of her show at WLIV Radio.
Wow.
I remember doing New Jersey Network Television with Pat Battle, who is now on NBC, and her husband Anthony, I think, is over there on ABC. And
right.
So very good friends, and just doing a whole lot of stuff. You know, I think you guys there, because Wayne Gilman was the news director of everybody. By the way, I think they just put up with me, because when Judy left, I think I was the only female on the air there for a while, and
a long time.
And I could see you guys were letting me do anything. Let me do anything I wanted to do, though. You know, because I did. The thing that I did with relationships, remember that? That was hilarious. And then I had a children's show. The children's show, radio show, was very successful. And a thing happened, you know, so much happens, you know, when you do a daily talk show and a daily television and radio show. But I remember doing, you know, a show called Children's Forum. And the child had to be maybe 4 or 5, as long as they could talk. And we would get some pretty cute kids calling in and telling me various things. And, you know, one little kid said, "Miss Thompson, do you know I have to do this and I have to do that for my mommy?" And it was really very cute. And I remember one time there was, I don't know if you remember this, Wayne, but a story of a bear or a lion who had, mauled a child in Bronzu. Do you remember that story?
Vaguely. It sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I was wondering, because the Children's Forum show was every day for a while. And I was thinking that I didn't know how I was going to explain to the children that this animal, it was either a lion or a bear, you know, had poor, you know, just killed this kid. And I was so worried about it because I didn't want to upset them. And I knew someone would ask. I just knew someone would ask. And I didn't even sleep the night before. And I got to the studio the next day and, you know, did the morning show and so forth. And then I was doing the children's segment. And one little kid, the phone rang, and one little kid said, "Miss Thompson, you know, why did that big bear, or if it was a lion, I don't remember which animal it was, why did it eat the little boy?" And I knew it was happening, so I told him the story about, well, God wanted him to come and be in heaven. Or that was the story that I gave. But that was a very painful period for me being on radio. And every time I thought about that, it became very emotional because of what that little kid said. Also, I had a segment called Police Report. And I don't know how many of the cops would remember this, but that was, I set that up with, you know, at the behest and with the permission of the Suttons, you know, Ali al-Rahman, who was head of the Guardians, the Black Police, the Guardians at that time, and he would have about four or five of his guys, including Alfie Thompson and a few other people. He would be, I asked him to deal with the program, you know, the problems that was going on in Brooklyn primarily, because, you know, the cops were, let's face it, they were beating up black people left and right. You know, that was that time that that was going on, and it's still going on.
Exactly.
But, I told Ali, I said, if you can offer some help to the people who are calling, because I tell them to go to this one organization that was supposed to, you know, deal with the problems with the police department, but they were afraid to go, and when they did, nothing happened. Okay. I also remember the Tawana Brawley case happening during that time. I was the first person that had that story on the air. And I'll tell you who gave me that story. I got a phone call when I was on the air. I was doing nighttime. You know, I think that was, yeah, I did that for a couple of minutes. Maybe when I say a couple of minutes, you know, just time slot had changed. And it was on from 5 until, was it 5 until 9, Wayne?
Yeah, because remember, WLIB was a daytime station at the time.
Yeah, and but then I did the 5 to 9.
Right.
Yeah.
And
what had happened
time,
was that Sonny Carson.
Yeah, Sonny Carson had called in.
That's right. He called in and he said, told Denise, who was on the board at that time, my engineer, and she said, okay, Sonny's on the phone. He said he has to talk right away on the air. And I knew I didn't have that permission, but, you know, he came on anyway. I said, okay, let's roll with it. And he told us that there were some cops who had, you know, raped this kid in Wapaju Falls. And I remember saying to him, Wapaju, where? Because I'd never heard of it before. And he told me the story of the cops who, you know, raped this, was it rape or something? Or what? That was the story.
It was rape, yeah.
Yeah, that was the story that he said. And Sonny Carson, when I tell people that I knew Sonny Carson, some of the people in Brooklyn and New York said, "You knew who?" And I said, "Yeah, Sonny was a nice, he was a good friend of mine. He would call all the time with different stories and whatnot." And they were all, he said, "Do you realize who you were dealing with?" I said, "Yeah, Sonny Carson." And people listening in New York right now would probably remember Sonny Carson because I understand that he was quite a person to deal with in out of the community. In other words, he didn't take too much stuff from folks.
Well,
no, but anyway.
I don't know if you remember, Kay, but Sonny Carson was well known. There was a movie, The Education of Sonny Carson, that I guess is still available to people to download through the internet.
I mean, I've never seen that.
Other...
I've heard about it, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, you need to see it because Sonny... He was an activist the latter part of his life, but he had done time for murder.
So I heard.
Yeah, he was a gang member and that's how he kind of turned things around there. Now you guys, if I could just backtrack a little bit, you're first talking about Intermedia. You had gotten into Media Mama through some of the TV stuff, Channel 47.
By way of New Jersey Network, you expressed an interest in there, and some people you're able to meet some people that were able to put you in a place to do some on-air to be an on-air talent for some news things, and that's from there led into you eventually being on WLIB. It's interesting to note that before that, I forgot to mention you were a school teacher early in your professional life when you first graduated college and things like that. And when you hold that up to the mirror of American history, we know that a lot of African-American people became school teachers. You and my uncle, late Congressman Donald Payne, were teachers together in Passaic, was it not?
As a matter of fact, Donald had gotten me my first teaching job in Passaic, New Jersey. And he was great.
Right.
Donald Payne was absolutely great. He was quite an educator, by the way. He was a great, great teacher. So many people remember him probably in that area, and they certainly benefited from him. He was also the head of the Y, the YMYHA, I think it was, in Newark.
YMCA, and a lot of people know that that's the story that goes on with my uncle. But I'm just saying, when we stand back and we have the look at your life and a lot of lives of ourselves and people that we know through the lens of history, you can see that a lot of African Americans were choosing professions in education and things like that, even the generation before you. So now I just wanted to go backtrack and establish that communication. Being something that you were into and eventually became a teacher at a school that I would go to later on, one of my grammar schools.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about you guys being on the radio, you and Wayne, and during that whole tenure, you guys were exposed to and you guys were a part of some of the bigger stories in history. You guys were on the air during the David Dinkins, first African-American mayor elected to the city of New York. You guys were on the air during those years, as you said, the Tawana Brawley case, various Bernard Goetz case, Jesse Jackson running for president. You guys were on the air. So talk about some of those really historic events, and you and Wayne as well.
Yeah, and WWRL, you know, I was working for WWRL for a while, too, you know, filling in for Bob over there, and for Bob for a while over there.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see, going back to, but New Jersey Network Television did that,
right.
You know, talked to Dr. James Lee, who was a, who is a black doctor, and he has his, you know, horses. And we did a story on him and his winning horse, Photomaker. So, and he still has winning horses.
The years that you're on the radio, talk about the Dinkin years and things like that. What type of issues? Remember there was the, during Dave Dinkins, what are the things that Mayor Dave Dinkins was particularly challenged on? And maybe you could chime in here, Wayne, too. I know that Dave Dinkins was challenged by the Crown Heights affair. When you have the kind of the animosity between blacks and Jews and Hasidic Jews and Crown Heights. Wayne, would you like to chime in and talk, give the historical context?
I was going to defer to your mom, but in all honesty, I mean, those were very critical and pivotal years in New York City's history. I mean, not only did we just elect the first African-American mayor back then, but we had just come through 12 years of a lot of polarization and animosity and anger, particularly I have to emphasize polarization in the black and white and Latino communities because of the former mayor and late mayor, Edward I. Koch. We had the issues of the Korean boycott of stores that led to a lot of anger. The racial profiling was way off the charts, and there was one incident. I can't think of the young man who was killed at the hands of the New York City police. And there was a huge funeral was in Brooklyn, and Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, along with the mayor. I don't know, Kay, if you remember this, packed the church. I believe it was in Brownsville. I can't think of the name of the victim off the top of my head, but you would know it immediately. And it was like maybe two, this shooting in Brooklyn where a young black man lost his life at the hands of the police. And 2 weeks after that, New Yorkers were going to the polls to elect a new mayor. And at that point, I think that incident catapulted David Dinkins rise to power as the first black in the city of New York to hold that position. People were just fed up with the racial profiling and the anger and just the despicable behavior that was going on during the Koch years. And Koch is witty and as amusing as he would be, and even though he himself had a civil rights background, he did a lot to stir the friction between blacks and whites in New York at that particular time. Late 1980s, early 1990s, and it was all during the period that Kay was there. And, you know, you talked about the Tawana Brawley case. Had it not been that particular case, there's a lot that happened
that
with the activist
case,
movement in New York.
That case was broken on my show because Sonny Carson did it. He,
right.
Not that he had anything to do with Tawana Brawley, anyway, what had happened was that he called me on the air and, you know, he said he would have me, but want to come on because the fact that he had heard about this, you know, this young girl being, you know, molested or raped by, you know, these six white cops or something like that. And I told him that I couldn't do that because I didn't have the, you know, the permission to do that. But Sonny Carson was the first person who came on the air with me and to want to do that show. And then I think it was picked up by the next morning. But also, what about the Central Park Five and that story?
Right.
And who put that and who made a full-page ad in the New York Times or the Daily News about them? But
Donald
what's his
Trump.
Name? That's Donald,
right. Trump.
Donald Trump. There you go. And those boys were found not guilty after they spent how many years in jail?
So what was
almost
the nature of
that? Almost a quarter of a century, it seemed.
Say it again, Wayne.
It said it seemed like almost a quarter of a century, but I would say a good 10, 15 years. And then, worse yet, he was calling for their deaths once they were released. I don't know if you remember that. Took ads in the paper, said that they should have been killed.
What was the nature of the ad, Wayne? I'm just trying to. Do you remember the ad? The nature of the ad that was taken.
No, just that he was upset that he was determined to show where they were responsible for the rape of that Wall Street lady who unfortunately was victimized while jogging through Central Park, and he took out ads talking about. These black kids were wilding in Central
Park.
Right. They created the atmosphere. That was a word that we never used in the media until then. And I shouldn't say we, because only some members of the press were using wilding.
We have about 2 minutes, but let me just say
okay,
this.
Okay, go ahead.
The person who knew that story was Anna Phillips, okay? She was working at NBC, at the CBS, I think it was, at that time. And she had talked to the guy who did that, and she had talked to the police. The policeman in New York knew that. I had Anna on the show several times, and she told us the same story. Even when I started doing, doing the show on WLRB. So I had her on, and she told the story. So that was that story. Those boys did not rape that woman. They got, what, about $40 million or something? They should have gotten more than that because they didn't do it.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to have to kind of wrap it up here. But there are also a number of other stories that you guys, that events that took place during the tenure of the time you guys were there, Nelson Mandela being released from prison and coming to New York City. We haven't even talked about that, but we are at the end of our time. For this evening, Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can hear every show by going to Kay Thompson Live /Blog Talk Radio every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. to hear it live, and the show is also archived. Thanks again for listening. Mr. Wayne Gilmer, legendary newsman, thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you. Always a pleasure.
And once again, my name is Eric Payne, and you are?
I'm Kay Thompson.
Listen to the Kay Thompson Live Show every Wednesday here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. As I said, blogtalkradio.com/Kay Thompson Live. Next week, we're going to pick up where we left off and talk about the other historic event that my mother, Kay, and Wayne have been involved in. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.